Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and definitely a bottom. I think we can all agree on that. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and a plot twist, a switch.
Okay, so
we kind of knew that.
This is really interesting. I occasionally, on some of my worst mental health days, you know when you just want to, like, emotionally punish yourself? So sometimes I'll, like, go read our reviews on, like, iTunes, and most of them are very nice.
Uh-huh.
But there's my favorite one is the one that says we're too heteronormative. I was like,
but, like,
you don't understand us. You're just not comprehending the words that we're saying, but okay.
Yeah, like, and that's an older one. But neither of us were talking about straight relationships.
Yeah.
In any of
and
our
neither
stories.
Neither of us are straight.
And neither of us are, yeah.
Or have been during the duration of this podcast.
Yeah.
That's like straight up biphobia and also probably a sprinkling of misgendering would be my guess as
right.
to what that is. But
right.
anyway, fuck that person. My point was there are sometimes people who say in our reviews that our show is too like submissive centric. And sometimes it's a nice way of phrasing that where they're like, if you want like a more well-rounded like perspective on kink, maybe like seek out a different show. Or like sometimes people will write to us and say like, do you know a show that's like your show, but more oriented toward dominance? I don't really, by the way.
Yeah.
But most other kink shows do probably have a more balanced perspective. But like for a long time, we were both identifying like as subs. And that was like our main experience of kink, and yeah, as you said, plot twist, you're
yeah.
feeling kind of more in the middle these days.
Yeah, which like isn't entirely surprising looking back.
Mm-hmm.
My toppiness was just always like a little bit less explicit because like I don't enjoy like I don't know the practical skills of topping.
Mm-hmm.
Rope stuff or hitting someone or whatever that looks like sure they're fun as tools, like they're skills that I do want to pick up on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But really what I enjoy more is like controlling someone's experience and then creating an environment and a custom experience for them and like to guide them through a thing. And I also really enjoy a lot of daddy dom stuff, like caretaking and nurturing and,
mm-hmm.
you know, helping people do things and bossing folks around and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think it's worth differentiating for those who might not know, topping and bottoming versus domming and subbing.
Yes.
So, I mean, different people have different definitions of this, but the way that I look at it and the way I just wrote about it in the introduction of my forthcoming kink book is a top is someone who is giving sensation or performing an action. So think of like someone doing the spanking or someone wielding a flogger or someone pouring wax on you. And the bottom is the person who receives that sensation. And the thing that makes it complicated is domination and submission are two, like, potentially related but different things. Like, a
mm-hmm.
dominant is a person who, like, controls the action of a scene or, like, makes decisions or has more power or a higher status within the scene. Whereas the submissive is someone who is submitting or who is following orders or following, you know, the direction of the scene as dictated by the dominant. So you can see how, like, oftentimes tops and doms and bottoms and subs line up, but they don't have to. I'm frequently a dominant bottom because my partner is a switch and kind of like a top-leaning switch. So, like, even when they're subbing, they kind of like to top sometimes. So, like, me as a dominant bottom is just like, I'm going to lie here on my bed of pillows because I'm a Taurus queen. And just like, you can go down on me and do it perfectly or you shall be punished by my wrath.
And yeah, and almost all of my dominance happens from the bottom, too. If we're
mm-hmm.
talking like things that traditionally look like kink,
mm-hmm.
Like beatings, which comes up a lot in my kink, I am almost always the person getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will playfully hit my partner sometimes, and like, I'm sure I will do scenes where I beat them, because
mm-hmm.
I can. But like, more often than not, I'm enjoying telling them how to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And like creating an experience, because I really enjoy receiving sensation and I really enjoy receiving pain.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things I didn't want to like give up on in kink. So I just kind of stuck to the bottomy side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm enjoying I'm realizing how much I enjoy control as, and this idea of kind of being able to curate what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you could consider dominance like a type of like emotional or mental topping,
mm-hmm.
if you want to get really kind of meta kink nerd about it.
Right, because like the way it comes up a lot for me is like role play and stuff, mm-hmm. where I am controlling the narrative. I am, you know, dirty talk telling the story,
mm-hmm.
And like guiding the interaction. But I don't know how much that is topping versus doming and,
right.
you know, like where that line kind of blurs. But,
yeah, because I definitely, I traditionally think of topping and bottoming as being more physical, while doming and subbing are more psychological. But there's kinks like erotic humiliation and stuff where like there definitely is a top. And they are usually like, they could be said to be the person doling out the humiliation, the person saying the humiliating things. It's like, does that person necessarily have to be a dominant? Can a bratty sub, like, you know, emotionally wreck their dom in, like, a consensually humiliating way? Probably.
And that's what I love about, like, breaking down the difference between these two things is you get mm-hmm. to play in these areas of, like, great, so how do I, like, you have this really obvious track, right? Mm-hmm. The dominant is the top who does the things mm-hmm. with the... And you're like, all right, but what if I turn one of those on its head?
Right.
You know, take one of these different switches and flip it in another direction. Switches. And what kind of... Yes.
Just flip one of the switches around and you're good to go. Just
pick them up and stand them on their head. but not like I'm picturing, you know, a big wall of like all of these options. Yeah, and it may make sense.
If you will.
Yes. And it may make sense for them to all be pointing in one direction, but what happens when you turn them and what kind of stories can you create? And, like, it just kind of heightens often the taboo and the interest mm-hmm. and the uniqueness. And, like, they're just really fun scenes to watch, too.
Yeah.
I love watching switches play with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it definitely makes certain types of kink more accessible to certain people. Like, mm-hmm. one of the reasons I don't do a lot of topping is because of, like, physical constraints, like chronic pain and strength and mobility issues. But I can still, like, dominate someone, you know, with my words and my will and just kind of, like, my presence and my energy, even if they are technically the one topping me. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it opens up a lot of options. But so today we wanted to discuss bottoming skills, because you have a workshop that you teach or are going to teach, or...
Yeah, so I'm teaching a bottoming skills workshop for Tess next week on the 21st at The Loft. It's in Manhattan around Midtown. The address is on FetLife. You can go and look it up there.
Mm-hmm.
But Tess hosts workshops twice a week in Manhattan, more or less every week, pending like holidays and such. And they're great, and you should come on out and see me. And we kind of scheduled this workshop somewhat towards the last minute. So Kate and I are going to have a conversation about bottoming skills while I work on developing this workshop, and hopefully it will be great on Tuesday.
Yeah,
so come see it.
This is the kind of thing where, like, all of this information is definitely in your brain. We're just going to pull it out.
Right.
So, bottoming skills. One of the things we were discussing about this is how, like, bottoming skills are very under-recognized. Like, to the point that, like, even I mean, now will sometimes end a scene by, like, my partner will sometimes say, like, thank you, or, like, you were so good for me, or whatever, and I'll be like, I didn't do anything. Because, like, to me, it kind of feels that way, but, like, the only reason for that is because, first of all, we don't talk enough about bottoming skills and we don't appreciate them enough as a kink culture, but secondly, I guess I'm so fucking good at them that I don't always notice when I'm employing them, but I definitely am. It's like, why do you think bottoming skills are so undervalued and under-recognized and under-discussed?
I think because they're somewhat ephemeral. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not, you can't really put a finger on it. You can't say, I know how to tie XYZ knots. Mm-hmm. You know, I know how to throw a flogger. It's not really a tangible thing. There isn't any other tools necessarily that you need to develop some kind of competency with. Mm-hmm. It seems, and just looking at it, it seems passive. Mm-hmm. Things happen to you as a bottom. And it seems like your job is just to experience them. Mm-hmm. And I think also for me, it like pieces of that come somewhat naturally. Mm-hmm. And you do see stuff on more advanced kink things like bottoming for certain types of rope because you lean into some kind of flexibility with that.
Right. Or balance or yeah. some kind of musculature thing.
Exactly. But I think just for the basics of receiving pain or mm-hmm. like getting into a submissive headspace they're not really talked about. And I think you brought up earlier a degree of how these are kind of the soft skills that we have in business too that are based around like interpersonal stuff.
Right, because I as a journalist often fall into the trap of like my skills being discounted on the basis of them being what's called soft skills, which just means like, I mean, I don't know how an official person who works in this field would like define this, but like I would consider a soft skill like a skill that a lot of people think they could learn or think they could be good at, but that people with specific training or talent or both in the skill like are markedly better at it. And it is a valid skill. It's just like it's often discounted. And a large part of that is because of how these skills are connected to like femininity and women in our culture. And I think similarly in kink culture and in queer culture, like bottoming has some associations with like more feminine queers or women or whatever in ways that are sort of like marginalizing, which is obviously like not even true. Like there are bottoms of all genders and all gender presentations, but I do think that that yeah. is a part of it.
And I think there's also a degree of feeling like you're kind of born with it or you're not. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about things like pain tolerance yeah. as, like, just something that's kind of inherent. Or yeah. just, are you, like, a masochist is just a person who likes pain. You're just born liking pain. So all you do right. is show up and receive pain and like it.
So there's like, there's an actual, no. like, neurological condition called algolagnia, which is mm-hmm. where a person actually literally perceives pain as pleasure. And I think that a lot of people who, like, don't know a lot about kink think that kinky masochists have this, like, all must have this condition. And, like, I actually dated a sadistic dom once who had another partner at the time who had this condition. And he would tell me about how, like, sometimes she would, like, stub her toe or something and she would, like, get turned on. And I remember feeling, like, deep jealousy in my soul, like poly jealousy, like, not fun, nice, yeah. Inspirational jealousy of, like, why is he telling me this? Because this is just making me feel bad about, you know, my own abilities and my own skill. And the way he talked about it was so, like, wistful, as if, like, he wished that all subs would be like this. And I was like, dude, fuck you.
Yeah.
Because as you were starting to allude to, like, there are so many other reasons why someone can enjoy taking pain and take pain really well.
Yeah. And, like, pain is deeply related to this feeling of euphoria for me. Mm-hmm. But it still feels like pain. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't – it feels – good, mm-hmm. I guess, depending on how we want, like, in the broad swaths of that, it is a feeling I enjoy.
Yeah.
And it hurts. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy my body's response to pain. I enjoy the endorphins that it gives you to kind of cope with this feeling of badness. Mm-hmm. But, like, at its core, it's not necessarily something good, and it's, I develop skills to be able to take more pain, to be able to access that, like, kind of endorphin rush more. Mm-hmm. But there are things that go into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gillian Keenan points out in her book on her spanking fetish that in our culture, like, if someone is pushing their body to the brink of, like, their physical abilities in the name of, like, exercise or health, we're all kind of like, yay, good for you, like, go for it, even though, like, a lot of times that's really unhealthy. But then when people try to do the same thing through kink, like pushing their bodies through pain and through something that's an exertion in order to achieve, like, a sexual goal or sexual satisfaction, it's seen as, like, perverse or, like, not the same thing. Yeah. And for me, like, I hate exercising, but I can take a hell of a spanking, I think.
Yeah. I just spent the day in Disneyland and, like, I was on those roller coasters, I was reminded very much of the thrill I get through, like, a certain kind of bottoming,
mm-hmm.
right? A really stingy impact play scene
mm-hmm.
Will leave me giggling in the same way I was on, like, Space Mountain and Tower of Terror.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, hands over my mouth, like, just overjoyed giggling. And it's the same thing. Like, you're putting your body through this experience where your body is like, what is happening?
Yeah.
And is overwhelmed and is, like, firing off all these neurons and endorphins to try and, like, regulate your experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked before about how, like, I have definitely used bottoming skills to get through, like, marathon tattooing sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with my last tattoo in particular, I, like, that's the kinkiest I've ever been while getting a tattoo. Like, I was the furthest along in my kink identity development. So I was very, like, I very consciously went into it with the thought of, like, I'm going to use, like, the breathing techniques and the mental tricks and strategies that I use to get through pain in order to get through this. And it actually was, like, it didn't even hurt that much. I just, like, read a kinky book while I sat there getting the tattoo. But that was, like, a conscious choice, too, because I wanted to sort of, like, inhabit this submissive headspace of being, of reading this Laura Antonio book about master-slave dynamics while I'm getting this tattoo, because I really wanted that to be kind of in there.
And that's another thing, is accessing those headspaces.
Mm-hmm.
People talk about subspace the way people talk about orgasms, in that it's something given to you.
Mm.
Like, that a dominant pushes you into subspace, that they beat you in just the right cadence, or they give you just the right experience, and you slowly slip into the subspace.
Yeah.
And very much like an orgasm, it's something someone facilitates and can help you experience.
Right. You have to have the skills and the desire to be able to go there. I think that's a really apt metaphor.
And you have to communicate the way you get there, because most people are not going to be able to give you an orgasm without knowing how you like your clit touched, right?
Right.
And they may not be, you know, may not be able to get you into subspace without you communicating, well, you know, for me, thuddy pain is going to bring me into a much deeper, more meditative place with, mm-hmm. if I need something really restorative.
Yeah.
Whereas stingy pain is going to give me a much more high energy, showy, exhibitionistic kind of scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a top once who, I mean, I thought of him as more of a dom, but as we started to play, like, and I talked to him more, I realized he was actually more of a top without being a dom. This was the guy who, like, would spank me. One time he spanked me with a lightsaber.
Amazing.
And he was, like, making jokes the entire time. Like, really funny jokes. I mean, I'm not even a Star Wars person, but I was, like, cracking up at these hilarious spanking Star Wars jokes. But I was also aware at the same time, like, I'm really enjoying this scene, but I can't really get into subspace in this scene because mm-hmm. I'm pausing every few seconds to, like, laugh. I'm getting jolted out of kind of my rhythm, and he's being inconsistent, and he's like, not being super serious about it. And it's not that I need a dom to be super serious. It's just, like, depends on what you're going for with the scene.
Right.
Yeah.
And knowing and recognizing those things about yourself
mm-hmm.
takes experience and takes a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah.
That is all skills. And mm-hmm. I think when I talk to other dominants about picking up and playing with folks, and in the time I've talked, like, if I'm ever looking for folks to bottom for me, I think one of the most frustrating things I've heard is when folks come in and go, like, so what do you want to try? What are you looking for today? And they get the, oh, whatever you want, master. Oh, right. I'd love to do anything for you. Oh, I'm such a submissive little slut.
Yeah.
Like, no, but you do want things, though.
Well, so I get that because, like, even in my, like, long-term dynamics with doms, like, oftentimes my partner now will be like, what do you feel like doing tonight? And I will be like, I don't know. Like, I usually will say, I'll do what you tell me. And so I understand that impulse, because I think that part of that impulse is, like, genuinely a lot of bottoms and subs do get joy from doing the thing that they know their partner wants them to do. Mm-hmm. And also, I think as bottoms and subs, we don't always have as developed the skill of, like, knowing what you want in the moment and, like, mm-hmm. thinking about that on your off time. Like, you know,
right.
I know that my partner, their wheels are spinning even when sex stuff isn't happening about, like, what they want to do next. And I'm just not, like, I feel like a kid who shows up on the day of the test and, like, totally forgot to study when I asked that question. I'm like, oh, I literally didn't consider it.
yeah. And as a top, like, so the past couple of months, we talked about this in the 2020 recap, where I've been, like, really stressed and exhausted and not really had a lot of idle, like, daydreaming time mm-hmm. for sex the last few months of the year. And I really, like, it was so much more obvious that that was happening
yeah.
now that I'm in a toppy role. Whereas mm-hmm. if I was more submissive in this relationship, I would be able to just kind of go with the flow and mm-hmm. be like, because it wasn't that I didn't want sex. It was that every time sex happened, I was like, oh, shit, I guess. I mean, yes, sure.
Right.
I didn't plan. I haven't, like, yeah. shit. And I had that, like, I didn't study for this test feeling, yeah. like pop quiz, where I was like, oh, God, I'm supposed to run this scenario and I don't have,
right.
like, a Rolodex of fantasies to pull from.
Yeah. Well, it also reminded me of when I first started in journalism and I would go to, like, internship interviews. And a lot of times in those interviews, they'll ask you to pitch them some ideas. Mm-hmm. And at first I didn't know that. So I remember going for an interview at Vice and I was like vastly overdressed. And they were like, can you pitch us some ideas? And I was like, I've been wanting to write a thing about squirting. And they were like, do you have anything else? I was like,
yeah. Cause it's so hard to just kind of pull from.
Yeah. So I went to this workshop the other day at the Pleasure Chest that was taught by Tina Horn, and it was like a role play 101 workshop. But of course, nothing Tina Horn teaches is 101 because she's a genius. But one of the things she recommended that I wrote down because I thought it was really interesting was the idea of us as a sub, or really like as anyone, keeping a notebook that is specifically for sexual fantasies and thoughts. But like, I've heard this before as like a DS assignment, mm-hmm. but she specifically said, keep one that you don't show to anyone, because then you're not going to self-censor as much and you will have like much more raw material to work for. So she was envisioning it as like, don't, not only writing down fantasies, but also writing down like when you watch a porn clip, like what do you respond to in that porn clip, or like what sticks out to you? Write about scenes that have happened and like your response to those and what you liked about them, and just have this record. And I think that that's a really good idea if you're like wanting to work on your skill of like having ideas and having direction for what you want to do, even as a bottom.
Yeah. And what I love about that is that you're setting aside time to really reflect on your own submission alone, separate from mm-hmm. who you're playing with.
Yeah.
Because the other issue I had in the moment as a bottom, when people come to me and say, I want you to tell me, mm-hmm. you know, what you want to do or whatever, is that I'm often already in a flirty place with them, which means I'm already somewhat in a subby place with them, because we're getting to a place where we're playing, right?
Yeah.
So in my brain, I'm already like, but I don't know, but you're the boss though. Like I'm already slipping into that kind of like hazy, take me where you want to go place.
Right.
So one thing that I've found helpful is having almost my elevator pitch for kink,
mm-hmm.
just to start the conversation,
mm-hmm.
because what are you into is such a broad question too. Right. So like I have my go-to three kinks that kind of encompass most of my things, mm-hmm. right? I am a service-oriented masochistic switch,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of my identifier. That's where I can go to.
Yeah.
And then a dominant can take that and go, okay, well, you know, masochistic, great. I feel you look like you'd be really fun to hurt. What kind of impact do you like? And then I can kind of pull from, and I'm not thinking of what impact have I experienced and enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of what, like, I have already done this work. Mm-hmm. I already have my list. And they say, you know, what impact do you enjoy? And I know my answer already.
Right.
And I know, okay, depending on my mood, I might want this or this.
Right.
But I know what those two options look like. I'm not just pulling from the depths of, you know, what can pain play possibly look like.
Yeah. Like, one of my struggles with this question, especially with new partners, is that I feel like if I give an answer about, like, a thing that I like, it's going to be interpreted as, like, and I want to do this with you now, and if you don't want to do this thing, I will be dissatisfied. And it, like, to me, I don't want to come across as, like, pressury at all, so mm-hmm. I always end up, like, adding all these caveats, like, but, like, you don't have to be into that, and, like, it's okay if you don't want to do that. But, I mean, as we've discussed, like, kinksters, especially, like, DS kinksters or, like, sadists and masochists, like, in large part really get off on knowing that they are giving their partner what they want. So, like, you can provide those caveats, like, you don't have to be into this just because I said I want to do it. But, like, a lot of times people will be like, oh, well, you seem into it, and that makes me into it.
Right. And I think a skill, there is also a skill in communicating what you want. Not just, so there is skill in recognizing and knowing what you want and knowing the language to make that make sense in someone's head, right? Mm-hmm. And there is also skill in taking that language and communicating it in a way that exists within your power dynamic.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Communicating in a way that still feels submissive to you, that still feels powerful to them. Because we can recognize that, like, of course the bottom still has power in the scene. Of course it's important for them to enjoy the thing. Of course everyone wants it to be on board. Mm-hmm. And we're playing make-believe.
Yeah.
And in make-believe, this person is in charge and doesn't care at all what I think and is just going to do everything for their pleasure, right. You know?
Yeah.
So how do we... Because often these negotiations happen, right, while we're building up this rapport and mm-hmm. while, as a little bit of foreplay, right, we're talking about what we're about to do and yeah. getting kind of into it and slowly slipping into those spaces and slowly this, like, disparity in power is growing.
Yeah, and if I'm sexually attracted to the idea of being submissive, as I am, like, I know that as a strong woman, like, I could be like, I would like you to do this to me, but, like, that doesn't turn me on to do that. Yeah. Like, I think a lot of times when we talk about this very subject, it's like, well, you don't want to be too brash and forthcoming because, like, your top or your dom might not be into it. And it's like, well, actually for me too, like, phrasing those things as a, you know, in a strong, dominant way, like, just takes me out of the moment and makes me less into what's happening. And I don't want that.
Right. And, like, we've talked about how negotiating in headspace mm-hmm. is not necessarily the best for, like, consent stuff because there is some blurring there.
Yeah.
But it happens. It's part of it.
You can't always, like, totally prevent it. Yeah.
Right. And there is a degree of foreplay to it. There is a degree of enjoyment out of it. Like, it's not exclusively a bad thing or something that we should be avoiding at all costs. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that kind of cuddly negotiation with, like, you know, touching and, like, leaning on someone and, like, really flirtily saying the things I want to do and yeah. slowly feeling subbier with them until, like... Okay, we've kind of gotten most of our conversation out of the way, and now we just slowly fade into playing. There's not, like, a hard line where we, like, get up from the negotiation couch and walk over to the cross, like...
Right. Princess Callie, the, like, I think former pro-dom, and, like, she wrote the book on emotional or, like, erotic humiliation. I think she says in that book that she only negotiates in role, and she feels that that's important, I forget her reasoning, but then there, as you said, there are other people who are like, never negotiate in role. And like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of half in, half out usually when we have that combo.
Same. And I like using it as like a transition point, as a way to slowly like yeah. get into role. And I can do that more with someone that I have played more with, mm-hmm. right? Where negotiation, you're just cleaning up the finer points. But also, it's all of that pre-work that goes into it that allows you to do that.
Yeah.
And it's all of the work of knowing what kind of play you can do with pickup play, what mm-hmm. kind of stuff your brain is suited to, so that, again, you're not having these thoughts for the first time during the conversation. Mm-hmm. You're saying, okay, this is a pickup play situation. So I go to my, you know, memory of, so these are the things on my pickup playlist. Which ones sound great right now? Great. And everything becomes multiple choice instead of short answer, which is so much easier when the blood's rushing away from your brain.
Yeah. So to go back to how to ask for things in a way that is still subby or deferent or whatever, I think I have two main ways that I do this. One of them is like phrasing it as an ask or even like begging, like, mm-hmm. please, sir, may I have a spanking? And then the other thing I do is just like provide some information with which my dominant can do as they please. So I'll be like, I really like thuddy spankings, or like, I really liked it last time when you did this thing or whatever, which I like this method better than asking because I feel like this is less pressure-y. This mm-hmm. is just like providing data and they don't have to use it, and it can be a starting point for a discussion.
And I love that because I think it's really easy to contextualize that as part of your job as yeah. a submissive,
yeah.
right? Because, and I can see this more in the way I enjoy dominating now, but mm-hmm. it was something I was even aware of beforehand, in that what they really get off on is this control, mm-hmm. and, or for many folks, is this control or these reactions or this experience that they're giving you. Mm-hmm. And as the dominant, you can watch, but when a submissive is telling you what they're experiencing, you're, like, you get this rush of power. Like, I did that. Like, I made that happen. Mm-hmm. And the more information they give you, the more I can, like, it's more puzzle pieces I can use to build what I want to build, and it's more certainty I can have mm-hmm. that what I am trying to create is what you are experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
I also really love – I love doing that, like, giving someone the information, and I mm-hmm. also really love giving them multiple choice, mm-hmm. right? I've talked about this before on the show, but – the idea of you're building the playground, you're laying out all of the options as a submissive, you're saying these are all of the different things you can play with, there's a swing set over there, we've got a merry-go-round, we've got a slide, and the dominant's like, so I'm looking at that slide though, what kind of slide is it, tell me more about it, and you're like, well, it's a tunnel and it's got a curly thing, and they're like, uh-huh, go on, okay, great, yeah, I could work with that, you know, and you're yeah. you're giving them all of these options, and they're still building the experience, but they can't create it until they know what's there.
Yeah. This is what Sinclair Sexsmith calls the palette of permission, which I really, really like that term. Because, yeah, like, you have to, like, as a dominant, I would assume, you have to know, like, what's on the table and what's not. But, like, they often like to choose things within that rather than just having their choice dictated to them, because that's what they're into.
Right. And so much about kink is internal, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe I know I'm allowed to hit you, but I don't know what you're experiencing when I hit you.
Mm-hmm. How you right? want it, with what, how much, how hard.
And am I hitting you and, like, are you feeling punished? Am I hitting you and are you a person who, like we were talking about earlier, actually feels pleasure from pain? Mm-hmm. Are you a person who is enjoying endurance, who thinks they're serving me because I enjoy hitting you? Like, what is happening? What is your experience of this physical thing that we're doing?
Yeah. Yep. On that note, I feel like one of the biggest questions I get, especially from, like, subs and bottoms who feel like they're bad at subbing and bottoming, which I see you and you're not, and you don't have to feel that way, and I'm so sorry. But one of the biggest skills that you can learn as a bottom if you are involved in some kind of sadomasochistic play is pain processing or pain management, mm-hmm. Which is definitely stuff that I've had to learn. And, like, I feel like I should say, like, physically, the pain still hurts as much as it did when I started, I think. But it's just I've learned to think about it differently and move through it differently and, like, mentally and psychologically experience it differently. So, yeah, tell me about some of your pain processing strategies when you're being hit or whatever.
Yeah, I would say – so, yeah, I would also say that the pain I experience is as intense. But I have also, I think, gotten my body – like, through practice, just gotten my body used to the idea of it's not surprising – anymore. Right. Like, it still hurts just as much, but I know what the arc of that pain will feel like. I know what to expect. I know at what rate it'll fade, more or less.
Yeah, I used to feel like the word emergency used to come to mind when I was being hit, like, pretty hard, where, like, it felt like an emergency in my brain. Like, I went into this, like, sort of not panicky, but, like, in that direction kind of headspace, and, like, yeah, I don't feel like I go into that space anymore, and it's not because the pain is less. It's more just because, like, I know that I have lived through this before.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, your body, pain is a sign of damage or something being wrong, and your body has all of those responses to help you avoid that and, like, fix the situation. Mm-hmm. So your body sends all of these signals of, like, oh god, bad, ah, this is wrong, make this stop. So there is a degree of overcoming that just kind of comes with practice, that just kind of comes with, like, an understanding of that.
Yeah, and I have, like, a chronic pain disorder now, so, like, I've gotten even better at just accepting pain as part of life. I don't know that that's necessarily, like, increased my pain tolerance in kink senses, but, like, I'm definitely more accustomed to the sensation now than I was before.
Yeah. I would say also understanding my reactions to different types of pain mm-hmm. was very helpful because, again, I could say going into the scene, this is going to be a stingy type of pain. which keeps me very alert and can be very overwhelming for me. I feel overstimulated a lot of times with stingy stuff, which can be like really fun and overwhelming, but at the end of a stressful day is not what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But I would say that if I had a really stressful day and set myself up for a stingy scene, my pain tolerance is going to be lower. So just setting myself up for success with going in with the right headspace and knowing the tools that complement that or that complement the experience I'm trying to create may not have necessarily, I mean, really the idea of pain tolerance, however we define that, but it means I can do more.
Yeah. I think also being able to communicate that stuff to your top is really important. Like, dirty talk and, like, talking during scenes is not super important for everybody, but I know that it helps me. And so, like, for me, the type of talk that my top can, like, employ with me that helps me get through scenes is stuff like, you're doing so well, like, can you take a little more from me? Like, very, like, kind and encouraging. But I know that some bottoms, like, really respond to tops, like, being kind of mean about it, almost like a sadistic personal trainer kind of thing.
But some kind of check-in and some kind of response from my top can be very helpful.
Yeah.
Also, physical things, movement. The pain and impact, presumably, we're talking about pain from impact. Pain can come from all kinds of things. Yeah. But from impact specifically, there's this energy to it, right? And if I am... I particularly love being beat and bent over things because I can kind of stand up and, like, arch my back. I will sometimes hit the thing that I'm leaning on to, like, get that force through me and back out the other side, kind of.
Yeah.
I yell a lot. I always come back to the moment I was being beaten and just yelled, ow, fuck. And my dominant was like, is that a yellow? Is that a... I was like, no, just... but that is, like, the when it approaches really bad, sometimes I do just yell, ouch, and people are like, yeah, I know. But it's just my, like, wait, no, that one hurt, though, wait.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I started to notice this when I would have, like, health-related pain, and I would just start, like, punching or smacking my own leg to get through it, which seems so counterintuitive because it's like I'm giving myself more pain. Or like the other thing I do sometimes when I'm in health related pain is like start scratching my arms. And it's weird because like it seems like you're just adding more pain on top of the pain, but it actually like distracts me. It puts my attention elsewhere, and like you said, it helps kind of move that energy through my body into some kind of kinetic outlet rather than it just like staying stagnant inside me.
The thing I love about pain, too, is that it focuses all of your energy on one place. That emergency thing you were talking about earlier, you know, my brain still does do that in a less panicky way.
Yeah.
But for a moment, when you're experiencing pain, everything in your body is focused on assessing that situation. Right? In the same way... You know, I'm watching a lot of Battlestar, but a ship gets hit. Everyone stops to assess, like, okay, there is damage. How bad is it, right? It's everyone's focus in the moment. And that same kind of thing is going on when you get hit.
Yeah.
And I love the, like, laser focus that it can give you.
A big one for me is breathing and counting, usually in tandem. So, like... Sometimes my partner will tell me that they're going to give me a specific number of hits, either, like, to end a scene, or they're just, like, these next hits are going to be in a set of, like, 10 or 20 or whatever. And so knowing that, I can, like, inhale for a certain number of them and exhale for a certain number of them. And that's kind of, like, I'm doing a little bit of, like, math in my head and, like, also, like, focusing on that and on my breathing. And that really helps me get through it. That really, like... mutes the pain a little bit for me. It makes it noticeably feel easier to take.
It also, for me, just being able to see the finish line of anything, but just being able to visualize this is how much more of this will happen is very helpful with the counting.
Yeah.
I also like having music in the background, I've found recently, particularly music that I know.
Yeah, I'm the same way, because then your brain can kind of latch onto that and follow along with that, and it helps you float away a little bit.
Yeah, and it can kind of, I'm big on, like, sensory deprivation while I'm being hit, too. Mm-hmm. I'll often cover my eyes, or, like, I did a whole scene once where I didn't, like, know I was doing this, but had buried my whole face into the hoodie that I was wearing throughout the scene.
Yeah.
And came out and was like, oh, I guess I should, I guess, take this off. I'm, like, in the torso now. but the music is one tether and one, like, constant thing that I can kind of hold on to, and that kind of helps with the passage of time, which gets really fuzzy.
Yeah.
And it's comfort and it's stability, and you know what's gonna come next. Mm-hmm. You know, when things are uncertain around beatings, like, it's one current to hold on to, I guess.
Yeah, I did, I think it was a wax play scene with my partner, and they asked me beforehand, like, what music I wanted, and I said this band that I love, and so we were just listening to this band's discography during the whole scene, and I started just, like, singing along with every word of every song, because I found, like, that requires a certain amount of mental energy, so it distracts you. And also, like, it made me feel like I was good at a thing at a moment when I was, like, actually struggling a little bit to get through it. And so, like, that gave me some, I don't know, some added confidence or something.
Yeah, I definitely either catch myself, like, muttering the words to the songs, or I'm just singing them in my head. Mm-hmm. And I think for me it is, like, it's that, and it's also this, like, and it is also that consistency, right? Mm-hmm. It's, I know where it's going. I know what comes next. Everything else feels fuzzy and out of focus and, like, surprising and complicated. But I know where this song is going, and I know the words, and I can just live with that for a minute.
Yeah. We've also talked before about, you call this technique, like, just one more.
Yeah.
Where, like, you're really, I mean, I do this when the pain is really, really bad and I don't think I can take very much more. This is sort of a last resort method for me, but where you're, like, so in the moment that you're like, all I have to do is get through one more hit, and then you get through another one and another one, and you just go moment by moment. And I was actually thinking about this the other day when we were stuck on this airplane on the tarmac.
Oh my god, yes.
And I had to pee so bad. Like, it was the type of having to pee where, like, it's extremely physically painful. I was pouring sweat. It was, like, it was not a good situation, but I was really thinking about that because I was like, well, I don't know how much longer we're going to be on this plane. I can get through the next 5 seconds, though. Like, you know, and I just kept doing that. And, you know, just developing a new strategy every time I needed to, but, like, really coming back to that, I was like, my masochism training has, like, really equipped me for this experience.
Yeah. And you get stuck in this, you get to kind of play in that sunk cost kind of thing, right? I've taken this much, can I take one more? And you can, like, when I find myself in moments close to safe wording, and this is not to say that you shouldn't safe word if you feel like you should safe word.
That's a bottoming skill too, is knowing when it's appropriate, like, knowing when you need to safe word and, like, being comfortable doing so, which honestly, I wish I was better at that.
Yeah, honestly, that is probably the skill I struggle most in, is that sometimes it is easy for me to, like, there's a lot of stuff that I have some experience with and know I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for me to, like, go into it with the confidence of stuff that I do more often, and then slip into, like, a subby space before I'm able, because it's a lot harder for me to safe word if I'm in subspace.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder for me to communicate my needs in subspace. And there have definitely been times where I've, like a light switch slipped into subspace on something that I didn't expect to do, and realized, like, oh, my top is not as equipped for this situation as they need to be, or, like, oh, I just put them in a position. And luckily it's only ever happened with people I super trust and who are able to, like, back me up. But it's not like I've done it on a breath play scene where I, like, hadn't been choked in a minute and it happened and I was, like, out, and the person almost knocked me out and watched me and is skilled and knows what they're doing and didn't, and, like, checked in and was like, you good, buddy? You were supposed to tap. And I was like, that is the thing I was supposed to do. That, yes, I was. And I did not.
Yeah.
And so being able to recognize what those moments feel like in you, and being able to recognize those times when you've made mistakes, and fix that in the future.
Yeah.
And like, I learned that the way this person was choking me impacts me differently than other chokes that I have more experience with, and mm-hmm. it drops me faster.
Yeah.
And
that makes sense. My issue with safe wording is, like, when I'm subbing, sometimes I go so far into the mindset of, like, I don't make decisions. I'm, mm-hmm. as you say, I am not a thing that makes decisions. And so often, like, if my partner checks in and is like, what color are you? I will say, I'm not sure if I'm a green or a yellow. And the reason for that is, like, sometimes when you reach high levels of, like, pain or discomfort, it's like, yeah, it would be nice to stop doing this, but, like, could I go on? I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. and do I want to? I mean, this all gets kind of, like, conflated in my mind. And it reminds me of, like, I read this book by Raven Caldera that's about submissives with disabilities. And, like, several of the people in there who have pain issues said, like, be wary of the temptation to use your pain as an excuse to not, like, play as hard as you actually do want to. And I've had to, like, be wary of that. But yeah, so sometimes I will just straight up communicate to my partner when they ask me, like, I don't know if I'm a green or a yellow. And then they, like, know me well enough that they can, like, ask follow-up questions and figure it out. But usually when I say that, they err on the side of it seems like a yellow, which yeah. is reasonable.
Yeah, because there is definitely a place for me, too, where time is an illusion. And this could have been happening for 6 hours or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And if it's, like... And then I get to a place where it's like, this, I mean, it all feels the same, and we could go for another 6 hours or another 15 minutes, and I don't really know the difference, and I'm just kind of in the moment of this is happening, and this is what I'm feeling, and being able to communicate what that even looks like,
mm-hmm.
To your partner and communicate what you need in those moments and vet your partner mm-hmm. and get to that space, or aim at least to get to that space with partners you know can take care of you
yeah.
in that moment. Because there are things that I will play with people that I have more of a rapport with, and there I will let myself get spacier with people that I have more of a rapport with and that I trust more. Mm-hmm. And there's other stuff that I'm totally comfortable doing as pickup play.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, you can be, like, I go to kink events, and most people, if I'm, like, into them and they have some vetting with my communities, yeah, you could hit me a little bit. Sure. Let's find out how that goes.
Yeah.
And, like, we're not going to get super heavy unless it's with someone that I know can take care of me in that moment.
Yeah.
And there are vetting skills that go into that. There is knowing what gets me into that moment mm-hmm. that goes into that. And that's all stuff that I've learned through experience, but also through a lot of self-reflection and through a lot of talking to other bottoms to understand how they experience something different from me.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I understand that someone experienced something different from me, then I understand that that is something that I need to communicate to my top. Mm. That it is not a universal experience.
Right.
That, oh, in my body, stingy pain makes me giggly.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, maybe in your body, this kind of pain makes me cry, but that's not a bad thing, right? And right. if I'm giggly, I'm not laughing at you. It's euphoria. It's this, like, almost altered statey kind of experience. It's not laughter because something's funny.
Yeah.
It's just joy.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of the crying thing, I was, like, doing an impact scene the other day with my partner over the phone, and I was, like, having a rough emotional day because we've been traveling, and I said, I'm gonna cry, and I was reflecting on how, like, a lot of tops hearing that will quite reasonably be alarmed, and my partner was just like, yeah, like, cry as much as you want to. I love you. You're beautiful. I'm here for you. And then, like, kept hitting me. this is just one of the benefits of playing with someone for a while is they know the right things. Oh, another thing I wanted to add about, like, a thing tops can do to help with bottoms pain processing. So, like, when I get to that place where I'm, like, not sure if I'm a green or a yellow, sometimes my partner will kind of, like, phrase that question a different way by being like, okay, you're going to take with, like, between 1 and 20 more hits. What do you want? And that feels to me easier than answering the safe word question sometimes, because then I feel like I'm not disappointing my top because they have explicitly said anywhere in this range is acceptable. So, you know, sometimes I want all 20. Sometimes I can take like three more. And that like gives me a better sense also internally of how I am feeling. Because if I reflect and go, oh, I think I can only take three more, then I'm like, wow, okay, I really am at the end of my rope. And I might not have even like thought about that before.
Mm-hmm. I think the one big thing I want to talk about, like while we're talking about skills for in the moment,
mm-hmm.
is enthusiasm and expression, mm-hmm. which we always bring up, but we actually haven't talked about kind of in a minute, I think.
We did an entire episode about enthusiasm, like toward the beginning of our show, and it was kind of silly because it's like we were doing all these like basic sex acts and sex concepts, and then we were like, let's do a whole hour about enthusiasm. But it is that important.
Yeah. And there is a degree of a lot of dominance come to this. Because they're creating this experience, but also because they love reactions.
Yeah.
Right? Something that I get complimented on all the time is my reactions and my expressiveness as a bottom,
mm-hmm.
which is something that I didn't really develop. It's something that I came to relatively naturally. I'm just a very expressive person.
Mm-hmm.
In general, you just see every feeling I have on my face. I was walking through Disneyland the other day, came around a corner, like alone, grown-ass man alone in Disneyland, came around a corner, saw the Millennium Falcon, and screamed. Like, it just came out of me. When I feel joy, you see it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And being able to access that is extremely valuable as a submissive because we think of kink as something one person does to another person, but it's a conversation.
Yeah.
They don't walk into it saying with, you know, a code of how they're going to hit this person where.
Right.
I don't sit down and I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to spend 15 minutes in the upper left quadrant of their butt. I'm going to hit them with something stingy right in that, you know, mean-ass crease, and then I'm going to spend some time on the thighs, right? Like,
otherwise known as the mean-ass crease.
You sit there and you look for the parts that get red. You look for the parts of their body that lean into your touch. You look for the things that make them squeal and yelp and go, that's fucking adorable. I want them to do it three more times.
Right.
Right? You're building off of their reactions and you're having a conversation with that. And as a submissive, it's difficult to, if it's not a thing that comes naturally, it's difficult to access that without feeling performative, while still accessing your headspace, while still working on pain management and all everything we were just talking about earlier.
But here's our galaxy brain moment, is that performativity isn't necessarily bad.
Absolutely.
And can be actually quite authentic in a weird sort of backwards way, in the sense that, like, you know, watching a piece of really melodramatic media when I need to cry in order to make myself cry, that's, I'm accessing a real emotion through a thing that is clearly performative.
Mm-hmm.
And on the comment of, like, what you were saying about how tops don't necessarily, like, have exact blueprints for a scene, like, when I have to tap out of an impact scene early, or, like, what I perceive as being early based on precedent, I often am, like, flooded with, like, subspacey shame, and I'll say to my partner, like, I'm sorry I couldn't take as much as you wanted me to. And they always seem really, like, thrown by that. Like, they're always like, you took the amount that you could take, and that's what I wanted you to take. So, like, and I think that a lot of tops feel that way. And if they don't, they're probably not very nice.
Right. If they're looking for someone to just fit into a scene that they've already built, and if you safe word and they're like, excuse me, my culmination had a crescendo with these three other implements and I didn't get to them, how dare you?
Yeah.
Like, I may be planning three steps ahead, but I'm not some grandmaster chess player that's got, that like knows where I'm working towards this thing, you know? And even if I have, like, a flash of inspiration, and I'm like, oh, we're gonna do this, and then you safe word, I'll probably play with you again.
Right.
Like, I'll probably have another opportunity to use that idea. I'll just tuck it away and come up with it somewhere else. Or tell it to you in dirty talk at another thing and be like, you know, this is everything else I was thinking about doing to you. You know, the idea isn't wasted because I'm not doing it in this moment.
Yeah.
But, I love what you said about performativity, because I do often, as an exhibitionist, really get off on being a little performative on translating what's happening in my body into an expression that other people can see, into noises and movements and sounds and, you know, whatever. And part of that, I think, just comes with being comfortable practicing that on your own. Mm-hmm. If you're a person that isn't particularly expressive, because the culture doesn't necessarily encourage it, right? Yeah. We're really taught to moderate our emotions and be quiet and chill and, you know, stoic, especially masculine presenting people. Something you can do to practice that is just spend some time alone in your room playing with different types of expression. Maybe it's while you're jerking off you experiment with sounds, because, you know, we're growing up, we learn to jerk off in our parents' houses where we have to be real quiet, and most of us are grown-ups and are allowed to make noises in our houses now. Unless you have roommates.
In which case, keep it respectful.
Yeah.
I speak from experience.
But it may not even be sexual, right? Maybe you make yourself this luxurious dinner and just revel in feeling it and just describe to the empty room how it tastes and how it feels and make those like noises like you're on some fancy cooking show. Be fucking Paul Hollywood and be like, ugh, this is delicious. And, you know, whatever, you know, watch a movie and, you know, laugh out loud alone. Because how often do we laugh to comedies alone?
I was going to say, like, it reminds me a lot of that. Like, think of the difference between if you were literally alone in your room watching, like, a comedy special on Netflix. Like, the extent to which you react to that. Versus if you go to your best friend's improv show.
Yeah.
You're going to laugh your ass off. And it's not necessarily that you're faking it. Like, I wouldn't fake laughter in that situation. I'm playing it up, but it's like not even entirely a conscious decision to play it up. It's just like I know that I'm in a different context and that if I want someone to understand that I am amused by what's going on, I need to project and communicate that. And so like if you can – I do think that you're right that like a lot of these forms of expression are like linked in the brain or exist in similar places, because I think if you do practice it in even non-sexual context, it does start to come more naturally.
Yeah, because I've had people even comment on, like, someone offers me a piece of their food and comment on just how delighted and surprised I am that they gave me a French fry. Like, it's, you can just start to kind of connect your body and expressions to what you're feeling and be more comfortable being in that. And it's something that comes and goes. I've talked about wanting to get more in touch with my body now because through a lot of my transition, I've disconnected with a lot of parts of my body because they gave me complicated and uncomfortable feelings. So it's a process, and it's not always going to be easy, and it's not always going to be front of mind. But I think learning to connect those things and learning to – and also setting people up to know what to expect from those feelings, right? When you say if you're hitting me with a lot of thuddy stuff, I'm going to get very quiet and slumped over and I'm going to close my eyes a lot. And it's not because I'm blocking you out. It's because you've gotten me into some really deep meditative place. And that's what I'm experiencing when you're seeing this that looks more vacant and less visually interesting or whatever. So again, giving them context for your reactions can make even the quote unquote less interesting reactions much more titillating, because I understand what you're feeling based on what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and a large part of this too is like after the fact affirming what you liked and what worked and how you were feeling. And I think I really struggle with this, as we've discussed before, because I'm not coherent in subspace. And so during aftercare is like not a good time for me to have that conversation. I've had a lot of tops and doms like immediately after the scene be like, what did you like about that? And I understand the impulse totally, like, because when I dom and top, I also feel that impulse. But you're just not going to typically, like, get that much useful information unless, like, the reason you're asking is because you like hearing your sub or your bottom be, like, incoherent and, like, slurring and being like, oh, my God, I don't know. but, like, so I get really kind of embarrassed about or shy about, like, talking about this stuff in person. So I like to do it via text, and like oftentimes me and my partner will like text the morning after trying a new thing, and they'll be like, what did you like about that, any notes? And then I'm in a better place to kind of like review the tapes, although I will sometimes ask them to like jog my memory a little bit, especially with hypno stuff, because it's like, oh, I was spacey that whole time. I don't really, if you could just tell me two or three things that happened, I might be able to remember them.
Yeah, and I think there is definitely some responsibilities on the part of the submissive that come after the scene that, mm-hmm. again, a lot of people don't think of. We contextualize aftercare as how do you take care of the bottom who is in this spacey, vulnerable, silly place because yeah. their needs are so much more visual, right? You take someone in subspace, I could easily assume they were drunk or high or some other sort of intoxicant, right? They genuinely can be that inebriated.
Yeah.
And need that degree of like, all right, let's get you home, buddy. Come on. You know, that degree of care.
Yeah.
But there is also, we talk about this all the time, there is a lot of expenditure, emotional expenditure and also like fear that comes with topping mm-hmm. because you do a lot of like really scary shit sometimes to people yeah. and really like quote unquote not okay things and you know you can feel like the bad guy and that can be scary mm-hmm. And often as a submissive it's really helpful to be able to talk about the things you enjoy and just remind them that you enjoy it and that you appreciate it. And being able to have, even if you can't remember like specific instances, in as much as you can, being able to call back to specific things mm-hmm. makes that feedback just land a little more certainly.
Just the same way that we say when you compliment someone, you should be specific and you should use your own original phrasings as much as possible, because then it feels more specific, more authentic, and more memorable.
Right, versus like, yeah, that was great. What part was great though?
Yeah.
Was that, are you sure?
Yeah.
Or are you just not saying, yeah, that was awful? Cause that's a weirder conversation to have, you know, like, right.
Like even if all you want to do is like make your next scene better, like for yourself selfishly, like it's still a good idea to share this information because it will make the next scene better.
Right. And it can just kind of clear up a lot of nervousness that it's really yeah. easy to come out of a scene with.
This, from what I've heard from my dominant friends, this is especially important in scenes involving like harsh emotional stuff, like humiliation or degradation or that kind of thing, because it's easy to feel like you're actually an evil person if you're doing that stuff, or like, you know, giving someone a lot of pain or doing any kind of like consensual non-consent or whatever. Like it's easy to kind of feel like you are becoming that evil person. And so to receive some kind of acknowledgement that like, you know, your bottom wanted that, it turned them on, it worked for them, can help with that.
Also, if something newish comes up, even mm-hmm. just like conceptually, like they say something that they haven't like said often, call you a word that they don't often say or whatever, and like you're really into it in the moment and you like keep going with it, and like, or they, you know, try a new implement or whatever and you're like eagerly wiggling your butt and being like, yes, more of that, yes.
Yeah.
Bring that up again after and still say you're cool with it.
Yeah.
Because, like, there have definitely been times in a moment where I've, like, gone places and been like, oh, I guess we're doing that now. I mean, I'm into that. You seem into that. We're also into that. Great. We're going to keep good. Great. And then afterwards, I think back and I'm like, shit, where did I said some shit. Oh, I don't know where that came from. Well, they were probably fine with it. So, like, having that yeah. follow-up of, like, no, that was great. I also really liked it, even though it was kind of new for us, is, like, really, really valuable.
Yeah. And if you are offering some kind of criticism or adjustment or, like, this thing didn't really work for me, could you do something different next time? Like, be really gentle with that because, like, you know, doms and tops have a reputation of being, you know, fairly impenetrable emotionally and kind of like...
I'm a fragile beeb.
Right. Yeah, like the vulnerability of being a dom or a top is like, I wouldn't say greater necessarily. I don't think that either one of them is like greater vulnerability, but it is a different type because you are expressing your desires and enacting them in this very direct way. And so if you have a criticism as a sub of, like, something your dom or top has done, I think you should really frame it as, like, criticizing, like, this one thing and, like, not them as a person. Like, mm-hmm. it's this one choice that they made. It doesn't make them a bad person or a bad dom or a bad top. Like, surround it with compliments. Just make this little, like, you know, pillow fort around this criticism so that it lands gently, because like if you're just criticizing and being mean, like your dom is eventually not going to want to do anything to you because they're going to be scared of how you'll respond to it, and that's not, I don't know, it's not a great environment.
And even with this criticism, it comes back to what we were talking about earlier, where like you still sometimes want to feel subby when you're saying things. Like, maybe this isn't a power dynamic that turns off at the end of a scene, right? Mm-hmm. Or even if it is, like, you may still be in a subby space with this person and may not feel like bossing them around, even though you're totally entitled to give whatever feedback and, you know, the way you need to. And, mm-hmm. like, it just may not feel good and fun. And mm-hmm. this is all about make-believe and doing things that feel good and fun. So how can you contextualize that feedback in a way that still fits within your roles? So sometimes mm-hmm. I'll say things like, I'm okay with you doing that to me, but just know it's very mean. Mm-hmm. Like, just know that hurts me a lot in XYZ way. Just know if you're doing this to me, you're punishing me and not in a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are things that, you know, sometimes because of like my DS kink stuff,
mm-hmm.
I'm okay with them making decisions that I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's fun.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the moment, being really unhappy about it and being able to think back and be like, look at that thing that I did, is fun. Sometimes. And making the distinction clear of like, that is what you're signing up for as a dominant, and that is the scene I'm having,
mm-hmm.
Is a very important tool for them to have, because it doesn't necessarily mean it's a no.
Mm-hmm.
But just know that that's the game we're playing if you whip that out again.
Yeah, I like that. And it reminds me of how a lot of people don't realize that you can use like safe word language in like outside of scenes too. If you're doing more like lifestyle-y 24/7 DS, like I think occasionally my partner has asked me to do some kind of task out of scene where I would be like, that's kind of a yellow for me, like for these reasons, or like, That's like nearing a yellow, like maybe let's talk about it. And if you have those communication skills in scene, they can also be really useful out of scene.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is that it? Are we good to wrap up?
I think we're good.
Okay. Thank you for joining us for this in-depth discussion of bottoming skills. Maybe one day we'll do an episode on I actually think topping skills is like too broad a category to even.
It is. And it, like, that's what all of the classes out there are.
Yeah, it's true. Like, yeah.
Any rope class is rope topping. Any impact class is impact topping.
Right.
Like, you would think they would have sections on pain management skills in spanking classes, and yet I have seen so few of them.
Yeah, I mean, some really good educators do go into it.
Yeah.
I see it a lot in hypnosis, actually. There's a lot of emphasis on bottoming skills and subject skills in hypno, which is really interesting. I hope that trend extends out of that community and into the rest of the kink community in future years. Because, yeah, it's super important. And I know so many subs and bottoms who, like, feel like they're bad at it because they're not this kind of, like, media-sanctioned type of sub or bottom, or they haven't developed these skills, or they don't think they've developed these skills. Like, maybe they have. And I just want you to know that if you take one thing away from this episode, like, you are a valid sub or bottom if you are one, and there's just different ways that manifests, and there's always more you can learn, but like, you're good where you are also, I mm-hmm. think. Anyway, I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, and you can listen to my other podcast. It's called Question Box. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. If you want to see me talk for another hour and a half or so on bottoming skills, come on out to my test workshop on January 21st. The information is on test.org. We're going to be at The Loft in Manhattan. Address and everything is online. Together we're the Dildorks. You can find us at The Dildorks on Twitter and Instagram and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It brings us up in the charts, makes us easier for other folks to find, and gives Kate things to read.
Thank you so much to Protodome. He did our theme song. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye. Morning. Let's make a cup of tea.
morning. Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex. Is it? It's on, right? And not about.
Yes.
All right. Sometimes when I am out of my environment, I just forget things that I know how to do. All right.
That's reasonable. So it's hosted by Tess. We do biweekly workshops. That's two a week, not every other week. We'll do this again. It's fine.
Get on board. Yeah, biweekly, by my count, is two a week, and semi-weekly is one every other week, because I'm bisexual and I don't have an attraction for every other gender. I gotta stop. This doesn't make any sense.
It's just alternating genders.
Yeah, that's how bisexuality works, right? That's how semi-sexuality works. There's got to be a thing.
I think that's demi.
Well, that's a different thing, though.
Oh, God,
what's
we're so
demi-weekly? That's a half one every week.
Well, no, it's only the weeks that you like.
Only the weeks you have an emotional connection to.
That's I blog demi-weekly.
Okay, this is all going in the bloops, and you gotta go back and tell us where your workshop is.